is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside to the VSiN Studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network. We say hello to our friends watching over on Samsung TV Plus, where you can enjoy and get the viewing pleasure of the Lombardi Line. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. Michael, a fun college football Saturday on deck. Yeah. How are we doing this morning?
We're doing great. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Starts early, too. Alabama's in the 12 o'clock window. It's going to start early there. I mean, our Washington State Cougars play Arizona. That'll be a fun game to watch for me later. And then, you know, you've got your you got the Big Ten final matchup. Pac-12 final matchup there up in the Pacific Northwest. I don't think people realize. When I did McAfee's show yesterday, and before I came on, Herb Street was talking about with Pat about, you know, the history of Washington. But I don't think people realize, you do because you grew up there, what a historic program the University of Washington is. I mean, when I was Sonny Six Killer and Don James, and this was an incredible program that kind of has gone a little bit south and has, but now I think with the board, it's going to continue to come back, and it has national championship ability there. There's no question.
Yeah, there's been peaks and valleys for the Washington Husky program, and we'll get into all of that when we break down their game. College Game Day is in Seattle, so it's been cool to kind of see all those shots along Lake Washington, the greatest setting, Husky Stadium, and all that stuff. But Oregon-Washington is the big game of the day, and we'll get into that. But first, let's set the table for what we do have coming up here over these next couple of hours. 15 minutes from now, our buddy Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime and the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, will join us to give out his college football card. Tim, always with interesting plays, always got some dogs on the card here, so we'll get Tim's thoughts on the college football slate. Then 30 minutes from now, our friend Stormy Bonantoni, who you see Sunday through Thursday here on the Lombardi Line, she will be doing the Florida Atlantic and South Florida game later on this afternoon. So Stormy will be joining us from the Tampa area. We'll get Stormy's thoughts on the college football slate and also the NFL slate as well. And then in the second hour, 11:15 Eastern, Bucky Brooks, former player, now analyst over at NFL Network and Fox Sports. We'll talk about some of these quarterbacks here, because there's a lot of hype about these quarterback prospects in college football right now and what that could mean for these NFL teams and spinning it forward to the NFL draft, sort of setting the table for what could be a really, really fun class. And then at 11:30 Eastern, Matt Eumanns will join us for a couple segments in studio, host of VSiN Tonight and the co-host of the College Football Betting Podcast, give out his college football card and his NFL card. But before we talk about today's game in Seattle, I wanted to talk a little bit about what we saw last night in Boulder. What a game. Colorado up 29-0 at halftime against Stanford. There were 13-point favorites. We all thought that this was status quo, everything going according to plan. And then the second half happens, and Stanford absolutely shocks the Buffaloes, winning 46-43 in double overtime. Stanford had a kid at wide receiver. This Elik Iomanure had 294 receiving yards, three touchdowns. I mean, just an incredible win for Stanford and an incredible collapse for Colorado.
Iomanure had a coming out party. He's a redshirt freshman. He went to high school in Deerfield Academy up at UMass. He was a top 10 recruit, and he's a redshirt freshman. And he was like, okay, I'm big time. I'm showing everybody. And when he ran away from the whole Colorado team on the slant for what it was, 95 yards, and no one could catch him, it was like, got it. Like, you're going to get doubled every single play from here on if I'm the defensive coordinator. Impressive. You know, and look, I think Troy Taylor's done a great job. I watched him play against Arizona. It was a lot closer game than I thought it was going to be. His team was well coached. They're not overly talented. But Iomanure is incredible. I mean, he was sensational. The catch he makes in the end zone off the top of a head. I mean, this guy's got three more years. And, you know, you can just, as Belichick would often say, just put him up on the pro board because he's going to be playing pro football. I mean, you know, he's got a lot. I mean, that was an incredible performance by him. And a tribute to the, I think David Shaw recruited him there because he is a redshirt freshman. So, and he stayed because he's obviously, he's going to be a doctor, and he's got, he majors in medicine. And so he's going to go forward, but impressive, really impressive.
Yeah. He was like, I had never heard of him before. Like, I watched Stanford play Hawaii in week zero, and I didn't really see him throw the football to him. So I was watching the game last night. I was like, good God, this guy is real good. And he was going up against Travis Hunter, who a lot of people think is one of the best cornerbacks in the country. Yeah. And he just went ahead and took his lunch. And once again, 13 catches, 294 yards, 3 touchdowns. At one point last night for the in-game bettors, I believe Stanford, and I don't know what the exact number was. I saw a bunch of different numbers that were thrown out on social media when I was trying to play catch up a little bit. And I saw that I think they were 40-1 at one point in-game to win the game live. So if anybody sprinkled a little bit on the tree, they're having a fun weekend here on this Saturday because, man, like they were down 29-0, largest comeback win in school history, and they do it on a pretty big stage.
You know, and I think there's a couple lessons to learn, right? I say this all the time. You go in at halftime, you got to figure out how many points you need to win the game, and you got to take the second half, not that you're ahead, that you're tied, and how many points more do you need to score to win the game, which Stanford, you know, they still kind of play pace. The second thing is you know, for Stanford, you know, you're chasing those points, trying to get two, and the game, you could have won the game on the field goal at the end of the game because the score was to you. You would have been tied if you just kick extra points. You scored 5 touchdowns in the second half. Mm-hmm. You would have done it. So credit them. A really resilient win. And look, we know this. Colorado, Hunter's playing both ways. I don't know if you can ding him for not being able to cover the receiver late in the game because, I mean, the kid's got to be exhausted. Right. Yeah. And it shows you the lack of depth that Colorado has on their team. But they're coming. You know, Sanders misses that critical 3rd and 4 that would have kept the chains moving. They had a punt on that. And that led to the final drive to kick the field goal to get it to overtime. So when you're up by 10 with 5 minutes to go in the game, you've got to win that game with your offense. You got to be able to convert those downs so the defense doesn't have to come back on the field. Obviously, Colorado didn't do that.
Yeah, tough loss for Colorado there, trying to become bowl eligible. They still need 2 more wins to go ahead and do that. When you look at the schedule, it's going to be a difficult road for the Buffaloes, but we know upsets can happen in college football, but right now they have a lot of work to do heading into the bye week, and this is a team that really needs a bye week. Like you could see it watching them in that second half. They need a bye week in the worst way, and unfortunately for them, it comes now at a time where they give up a 29-point lead, so it's going to be a long couple of weeks before we see Colorado once again on the field. All right, let's talk about the games that we're going to see today. Starting in Seattle, Oregon at Washington, a top 10 showdown. College game day is there. And right now with the spread, we're seeing the Huskies are 3-point favorites, but at some shops, 3.5-point favorites. Total has ticked down just a half point from 67 to 66.5. But what are kind of your early thoughts here on the border war in Seattle?
Well, look, I'm a big Kalen DeBoer fan. I was a fan of his when he was at Indiana. I think people forget that when Penix was at Indiana, he was great. Mm-hmm. And when DeBoer left, all of a sudden, it wasn't the same thing for Penix. He got hurt. He wasn't as sharp. And then he transferred to Washington. And then all of a sudden, you know, reunited with DeBoer and things kind of changed for him. So I like Washington. I think Oregon's front is really good. I think they're tough to handle. You know, I think it's going to be a challenge for them to move the football because Oregon is – we saw this against Colorado. They're able to take the line of scrimmage. They're the 9th best defense in college football. They're the best defense in the Pac-12 in terms of college football. You know, they're able to play their pass. I mean, they're one of the best pass defenses in the country. They're 8th overall. And every number in terms of where they are, relative scoring, all those things in Oregon's defense is in the top 5 in the conference and in the country. The only thing you can do on them is really run the football. So, I think it'll be a great game. I think it's going to come down to the in-game coaching, in-game decisions. I like Penix over Nix. I know you love Nix to be the Heisman, and I think a lot of that's going to go to it. But I thought Penix, when I watched Washington play and I've watched Oregon play, I just think they're slightly a little bit better. I think the line says that, and I think it'll be a fun game to watch.
Yeah, Penix definitely has the edge at quarterback, in my opinion, having watched these two teams closely this season here. And this, to me, feels like this is going to come down to the fourth quarter. Like, I know that's cliche to say, but when you have two really good teams, two good coaching staffs, typically it does. And in a fourth quarter close game, I would lean to the side of Michael Penix taking care of the football versus Bo Nix, even though I have the Bo Nix ticket. And the Bo Nix ticket, the big reason for that was a game like this, a chance to have the showcase, a chance to have that opportunity on a national stage for everybody to go ahead and see you. But I think that Washington, like, I don't know if I would lay the 3 just because I think Oregon might be the more complete team, but with home field advantage, and we know about some of the road splits for our friend Bo Nix there. Like, I think that I would trust Michael Penix more in a close game in the fourth quarter where decisions have to be made than I would Bo Nix.
Yeah. Look, I think both coaches, you know, have done a great job. But when you watch this team and you see how they perform and, you know, they're able to score points at will, really. And, you know, look, when you average 569 yards of offense per game like Washington does and you score 46 points a game, you know, it's pretty impressive. And the scheme's really good. I mean, Oregon struggled against Tech in week two. I think you can make the case that Tech could have won that game, right? Mm-hmm. And now the last 2 weeks, there have been no struggle whatsoever. They've outscored their opponent 84-12, beating Stanford and Colorado, two teams that went into and both of them and beat them by the exact same score. Beat Colorado 42-6, beat Stanford 42-6. Kind of if you play that out, do you wonder why it was an overtime game?
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe taking the points at Stanford was the ideal thing, that there were 13-point underdogs in that game here. What do you make of the total, though? Because it's ticked down a little bit, 67.5, I believe, was some of the numbers. Now we're down to 66.5 and even see a 66 out there as well. Like, do you see this being maybe a slower start? I know these offenses are really efficient and they can put up points, but maybe it's a little bit of a slower start with all the energy and the anxiety here with this game?
You know, I think in these games, coaches, the good coaches, the smart coaches, they've got to pace the game. They can't, you know, you don't want to get into a track meet with another team that can play with a track meet. I think mm-hmm. pace is really important. And I think last night we learned that. I mean, if Colorado State plays with a better pace with the ball instead of, you know, everybody wants to play tempo, right? Everybody wants to play tempo. And yet in reality, sometimes you've got to play the conditions that present itself at the game, mm-hmm. right? You know, to me, as I often say, analytics doesn't know who's on the field. That's one. And two, the data is predicated on the past, not the present. So what's happening in the game really matters. I think that's important.
Yeah. Playing tempo. How about we play to win the game? How about that? That'll be a lot of fun. We'll see who Tim Murray likes to win these games coming up here on the other side of the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page, sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up today for only $19 for your first month at VSiN.com/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out on the DraftKings Network. Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. Femi Abebefe hanging out here in downtown Las Vegas. And our first guest who will be joining us, he's been cooking. He's been cooking with gas. And he told us that the Bruins were the side against Washington State last week, and they ended up being the side, knocking off our guy Cam Ward. It's the one and only Tim Murray joining us now this morning, host of VSiN Primetime. Check it out Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 Eastern. Also, the host of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Get it wherever you get your podcasts. Tim, let's go to Chapel Hill, where the Miami Hurricanes, coming off of God knows what the hell Mario Cristobal was thinking last week, taking on North Carolina. Right now, the line is down to 3, and I'm even seeing some 2.5s. I know you like the Canes at a number better than that, but would you still like it here at the current number of 3?
Yeah, I would take the 3, and I appreciate you guys having me on this week again. Yeah, this is kind of one of those hold your nose spots, right? Coming off of whatever that was. I mean, it was a terrible spot for Miami initially. They're able to basically win the game, and then your coach makes that boneheaded decision. So you do wonder, and it's fair to wonder, you know, what's the mindset of Miami coming off of that game? How has this week been at practice? You know, he has done this before. If you go back to his days at Oregon, when he could have essentially ran out the clock against Stanford and opted not to do so. They fumbled in that situation and ultimately lost to Stanford. They did actually win the following week. If you went back and looked, I think that was a 2018 game there for the Ducks. But I just look at this game and look, Drake May has been awesome. He's going to be more than likely the second quarterback selected, probably the second overall pick in the upcoming NFL draft. But, you know, you do have to look at their schedule and say, all right, who has North Carolina really, you know, taken to task, so to speak? You know, South Carolina to open up the year, App State, who is, let's be honest, kind of looking like a, you know, middle of the pack Sun Belt team this year. They needed overtime to beat Appalachian State. So I do wonder North Carolina's biggest test to this point, you know, you beat Pittsburgh, you beat, you know, Syracuse. So I think Miami is as talented, if not maybe a little more talented than this UNC team. So I'm just going to take a team that I think has a little bit more talent, probably not the edge on the sidelines or the edge at quarterback, but I think this is a bounce back spot, primetime atmosphere down there in Chapel Hill. And I'm going to take the Canes here at a field goal.
Tim, I know it's not on your list, but I'm confused a little bit here. You know, I thought the Louisville game for Notre Dame was a trap. I thought Notre Dame would win, but I thought Louisville would cover. I didn't think that Louisville would win outright. But what I'm really surprised about is that USC is a dog to Notre Dame. I know they're playing in South Bend. Weather may be a factor. But and I realize that Lincoln Riley is the Mike D'Antonio of the college football world. I mean, he doesn't care about toughness or defense, right? He just could care less. He's 80th in the country in scoring defense, 111th in total defense. Oh, and by the way, he's 131st in relative rushing defense. But no big deal. We won't bother about that. So, like, how is Notre Dame the favorite here? Explain this.
Well, first off, I'm just waiting now if USC wins for Lincoln Riley to pull a Ryan Day and, you know, cut a promo instead of Lou Holtz inserts Michael Lombardi there. I mean, let's watch out, guys, the numbers. All right?
I mean, yeah, they are not. He's never – when has his numbers ever been good defensively? Like, never. I'll argue that with it. I mean, he has a rep and, you know, and certainly he's got offensive scheme. But, you know, people kill Cliff Kingsbury, but they never kill Lincoln. And his defense is horrible.
Cliff Kingsbury, who is on this staff, by the way.
Yeah.
No, it's a fair point. And I'll be honest, you know, the look ahead lines were Notre Dame 2 the week before the Louisville game. And obviously Notre Dame went out and laid a clunker against Louisville, which was a situational spot to certainly look to back Louisville. I did not. I should have stuck to my guns from the preseason because I really thought that was going to be a horrible spot for Notre Dame. Now you come back home, and I think the more surprising thing to me is not that it opened Notre Dame 2.5, Michael, is that it's pretty much stayed there all week and has actually bumped up to 3. So it's telling you that, you know, the sharp money in the market, it's either, you know, laying the 2.5 with Notre Dame or taking the 3 with USC. So it's really interesting to see that movement. And I think what it comes down to is that odds makers are believing that Notre Dame is going to be able to run the ball successfully, which, let's remember, last year Notre Dame did not run the ball successfully against USC. That final game of the year, they were only able to run the ball for about 90 yards as a team. Oddly enough, it was USC who actually ran the ball better in that game against Notre Dame. So I was a little surprised, too, to be honest, as a Notre Dame fan. I was pretty happy to see that it didn't move drastically that way. And, you know, the only thing I'll say there, and this isn't quantified in the number, guys, but, you know, you can't fake desperation. And this is a very desperate spot for Notre Dame. You know, the heat has been on Marcus Freeman since the 10 men on the field situation. The offense has looked off for these past 3 weeks. You know, even though they were up and probably should have beat Ohio State, the offense certainly didn't look like it did the first 4 weeks when they were putting up 40 points per game. The wide receivers, which we all kind of knew would be a weakness, is really rearing its ugly head with a couple injuries. And, you know, I thought Louisville guys instilled a pretty good game plan. It said, we're going to play press coverage on your wide receivers, and we're going to load the box. And if you can beat us with your wide receivers, go ahead. So I think we'll see what USC decides to implement out there. And then, you know, Al Golden has actually done a pretty darn good job, the defensive coordinator for Notre Dame this year. So he hasn't faced a quarterback like Caleb Williams. He certainly faced wide receivers like USC has in the studs that Ohio State has. So I'm really fascinated to see. And final thought on this one, guys, as Michael alluded to, I do think weather plays into Notre Dame's hands. You know, temps in the mid-40s, windy. Rain is expected to dissipate by the time the game starts, which I think is helpful. But yeah, we will see. I'm not betting this game, but I'm cautiously optimistic that the market's telling us that Notre Dame is the right side here.
Yeah, I think this, for the college football prop players out there, could be a big game for Audric Estime, the Notre Dame running back. I feel like I don't see how USC stops him up front there. We're hanging out with Tim Murray here, host of VEASAN Primetime, also the VEASAN College Football Betting Podcast. Get it wherever you get your podcasts. We got a couple minutes left here, Tim. Real quick, I want to get your thoughts here on UCLA and Oregon State. You are the Bruin Whisperer here on the Lombardi line. Now they go to Corvallis, where they are catching 3.5, total sitting at 54. How do you kind of shake this one down? I know it's not an official play for you, but what do you think of the Bruins and the Beavers?
Well, I actually played the under here. 54.5 was there earlier this week. You know, it's 54. I'd still play it there. You know, I some respect to people that I know, you know, and their numbers say the over's the play. I just think Dante Moore, who I think will be really good as his career goes on, and you've seen the flashes, UCLA's quarterback. I think going up to Corvallis, a spot that, you know, the Beavs are now 15-1 straight up over the last 2.5 seasons. I think this is really going to be quite the spot for him. I haven't seen the final injury report, but I know Oregon State's right tackle got a little banged up late against Cal. We did see probably DJ Uiagalelei's best game as a quarterback since he got to Oregon State, maybe in his whole career last week against Cal. But, you know, as I mentioned last week with UCLA going up against Cam Warden and Washington State, this UCLA defense, guys, is the real deal. So I think Oregon State's going to want to try to rely on their ground game with Damian Martinez and probably some QB runs with DJU. And I think this is more of a methodical, a plotting type of game. You know, 2 weeks ago, Oregon State beat Utah 21-7. Now, I don't expect that. But I mean, that would be nice if since I'm playing the under here. But I do think this is more of a lower scoring 24-17 type of game. As for the side, you know, we've seen the market go a little bit in Oregon State's favor here. And I guess I would lean a little bit that way. But UCLA, as we saw last week, you know, this is a team that's kind of flying under the radar a little bit in this loaded Pac-12.
Yeah, I think they fly under, Tim, because nobody's used to them being this good defensively, right?
Yeah.
You know,
no, that's fair.
And I'm with you. I think Moore's going to be a really good player, but it just hasn't happened yet. And I mean, when you go back and watch the Utah game, the offense killed UCLA from winning that game. So
yeah, they won 14-7, right? So I mean, no doubt.
Exactly. So I think this UCLA team is just lights out defensively, you know, whereas the team across the town doesn't even understand how to spell defense.
Well, they have the Grinch who can't coordinate defense running things over there at USC. So
don't say anything bad about that program there, because they're, you know, wait till you see the first down they get, everybody, oh my God, what a great play call. That was amazing. Oh my God.
We'll see if they're fighting on today in South Bend. He is Tim Murray. Check him out on the VEASAN College Football Betting Podcast and VEASAN Primetime. Thanks, Tim, as always.
See you guys.
All right, Stormy joins us next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Basketball season is ready to tip off, and the VSIN experts have been hard at work tracking the latest player moves to help you bet smarter. Become a VSIN Pro subscriber today and get our all-new NBA betting guide featuring up-to-date previews on all 30 teams, futures, and year-long player props, best bets on player awards like Rookie of the Year, live betting strategies, plus strategy and advice on building your own NBA betting model from senior NBA analyst Jonathan Von Tobel. Give yourself an edge this season and get the VSIN NBA betting guide by becoming a VSIN Pro subscriber today at VSIN.com/subscribe. This thing is for the low, folks. $19. Get it done. All right. NBA season tipping off in about a week or so. I know Michael's excited about his Sixers and the reigning MVP, Joel Embiid. But let's
see. I'm not excited in the least.
Hey, he was at the Phillies game, Red October.
Don't put words in my mouth. I'm not excited in the least. Take the under.
We're greasing the pole for the Phillies.
For Nick Nurse. Take the under. Yeah, the city of champions. Yeah, the Phillies.
Hang the banner.
They'll be the exception to the Philadelphia rule this year. There's no doubt.
Well, we're going to welcome in our friend Stormy Bonantoni right now, who is out in Tampa for Florida Atlantic in South Florida. That game will be later on this afternoon, 3:30 Eastern kickoff, 12:30 Pacific. Stormy, hope all is well. Hope the travel plans were much better this week than they were a couple weeks ago. And we will start in my old neck of the woods, Seattle, where Oregon is taking on Washington. I saw game day. They're throwing the fish around. They got the Pike Place Market guys out there. What do you like in this Pac-12 showdown that has national title implications?
I also love, real quickly, Michael, that you couldn't even let Femi have it for a second. You couldn't even say, oh, yeah, I'm excited. Nope, just
not a no chance, Stormy. You know me better than that, Stormy. There's no way. When you prod me on the 76ers, you better be prepared to get an answer, right? Like, I don't let that slide. There's no way people are putting words in my mouth when it comes to that. But I like that you noticed. Appreciate you.
I live for it. And yes, speaking of of game day, they just had Dan Lanning on the big screen, and every time that man opened his mouth, he was getting booed as loud as humanly possible. So it's going to be a fun one out there in Washington. I'm actually super disappointed that my game is on in that same window, so I'm not going to be able to watch that one as well, because it's going to be so fun, and the potential start, right, of the Pac-12 carnage and these teams all beating each other up. I do like your Huskies in this spot. I think playing in Husky Stadium is going to be an advantage for them. And you guys tell me, who's the best team in college football right now? I think the Washington Huskies are, like, if they're not that team, they should certainly be considered as that team. Like, you can throw Michigan in there if you want to, but I, for me, Washington is the best team in the country right now. And they have the most efficient quarterback on the most efficient offense, who's favored to win a Heisman right now. 74.7% completions, 6 touchdowns, 2 picks, 399 yards per game, guys. And he's only been sacked 3 times. 2 of the best wideouts in the country. Like, so many things about Washington make me like them, make me give them the edge. And I know, Femi, you love Bo Nix on the other side, and I agree with you. He's been extremely efficient, leads the nation in completion rate. But I think that for as good as Oregon's defense has looked on paper, as Dan Lanning says, guys, this game isn't played on in Hollywood, and it's not played on paper either. I'm going to throw that in there. It's played on grass. And the defense is one of those things that looks good on paper, but with the exception of Colorado, played subpar offenses and gave up 30 points to Texas Tech, and probably should have been more. So I think Washington is going to score on this Oregon team. And if you don't feel comfortable with the 3, I don't hate the minus 150-ish price on the money line either. So maybe that's an angle and approach. I lean over as well, because like I said, I think that you're going to get points up on the board, but Washington, this is their first step toward the college football playoff in my mind.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. You know, you go out of these schools every week and you talk to the coaches constantly during the week. From your conversations, like, what is the team that you hear the most is the best team in college football? Like, I think you're right. I think Washington and Michigan might be the two best teams.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because the assumption is Georgia, because they have earned it in the past and we know what they've been able to do and they've won all of their games, but they haven't looked the same in a lot of instances. And granted, last week against Kentucky, they showed up, they showed out, they reestablished what type of team that they can be against a team that a lot of people thought was on the up and up. But I don't think that you can take past success and say that automatically makes this team in position, in the best position to be a three-peat champion, given the schedule that they've played to this point. Like, they haven't really had to play anybody. Like, look at that schedule on your screen right now, right? Meanwhile, I look at Washington, I feel like they have been tested. This game is going to be such a marquee game in that push toward, you know, ultimately what they want to do and be in the college football playoff. Like, for me, Washington is the best team. Michigan, I know, faces a similar uphill battle as Georgia, having not played a lot of heavy competition, but they just look the part, don't they? So for me, it's Washington and Michigan. And I don't agree with Georgia being the top dog right now. I don't.
We're hanging out with Stormy Bonantoni, VSiN host of the Lombardi Line Sunday through Thursday, also ESPN sideline reporter. You can see her running the sidelines over at Florida Atlantic, South Florida, 12:30 West Coast time, 3:30 Eastern, over on ESPN2. Well, you mentioned Georgia and the schedule. You do have a play in this game. They're taking on Vandy. What do you like in this Georgia-Vandy matchup, where it's once again Georgia against an inferior opponent?
Yeah, well, I don't think Georgia is the best team in the country. I do still think they're pretty dang good. And so I'm taking the over in this Georgia-Vandy game, just because I feel like you look at the games that the Bulldogs have had blowout wins and they've scored 44 or more points in all of them. You look at this Vanderbilt team on the other side and they are just so bad defensively. They rank anywhere from 121st to 130th in the country in points per game, passing yards per game, opponent first downs. I could go on. And then in the red zone, those numbers are what really stand out to me, because we know Georgia's very efficient in that 20-yard line and in. Vandy's given up 16 touchdowns and 11 field goals in 30 attempts. So points on the board in 27 of 30 attempts allowed inside that range. And they've got a lot of injuries on defense. I feel like Georgia's going to be in a spot where they can score at will. And then as it pertains to the total, going into that a little bit more, the question is, can Vandy score? Because we know they haven't against Georgia the last 2 years. They outscored them like 100. I think the number is 117-0 combined the last two meetings.
Yikes.
But Vandy's offense has been better since Ken Seals has taken over at quarterback, and Georgia's defense hasn't looked as stout as it has the last couple years. So I think they get in the party. I think this could be like a 44-17 type of a game. That's kind of the score range I'm viewing.
All right. So take a bow. You took your Niners early in the week at 4.5.
Thank you.
And now moving it's up markets. To 10. Yeah. I mean, you moved the market probably with that one bet you made, Stormy. We know this, but you got them at 4.5. Are you worried at all about the weather in this game? Now the line's 10. You got one hell of a number.
Yeah, I'm absolutely worried about the weather, but I feel very comfortable with the bet. And I think that this is just one of those instances where, you know, we're always talking about approaches to betting and making sure you're keeping up on news. But this was an instance where I feel like we were all talking a lot about what's going on with Deshaun Watson, and he still hasn't practiced even after the bye week, that I felt pretty firmly in my mind, if he's still not practicing, he's not going to play. So I jumped on that number. And I think that's just a good piece of advice in general for anybody out there. Like, when we see news that you can feel like you can anticipate what the result is going to be, try to take advantage of that opportunity when you can. And in this case, we saw even midweek that news was getting bigger and bigger out there, moved up to 7, 7.5. And then with the news confirmed, all the way up to 10. And it's just such a short spread game. Like, at the number that it's at now, like, I wouldn't want to touch it. But the 4.5, I feel very, very comfortable with. This San Francisco team is so good, so talented, and at such a short number, like, I feel pretty confident that even in the weather, they'll win by a touchdown plus.
Yeah, I think that's a great pro tip there for the folks at home there. Yeah. Elliot, make sure you mark that down there. Just anticipate some of the news and keep your ears to the streets, because it'll tell you what's going to happen later on that week. And no arguments there on this bet on the Niners. How could I make an argument after Stormy's team absolutely dismantled my team on national TV last week? You know what? We got to own it. We got to own it, and we're going to try to get better from it. Real quick, how about Patriots Raiders? Raiders right now are laying 3, total 41.5.
Yeah, I just like the under in this game. Neither offense has done anything for me. Raiders have yet to score more than 18 in a single game. Their defense is what won for them this past week, which isn't something we're very accustomed to hearing, but that unit is looking improved, and the Patriots outscored 72-3 the last two games, shut out their last one. The most points they've scored in a single game is 20, so I feel pretty confident that these offenses are going to struggle yet again. And with the Raiders defense looking good and what the Patriots defense we know is capable of, if they actually live up to that with some of their injuries, that's to be seen. But I feel pretty comfortable with the under 42 in that spot.
Mm. Thank you, Stormy. Great job. Thank you for
having us.
We miss you.
Have a great game in Tampa, Stormy. We'll be watching, and safe travels back here to Vegas.
Make that flight, Stormy. Don't miss it.
I won't miss the flight. I'll be there, guys. Have fun. See ya.
Get the running shoes to the terminal out there. That is Stormy Bonantoni, VSiN host. Check her out Sunday through Thursday here on the Lombardi Line. Also, she will be doing the Florida Atlantic and South Florida game. Are you going to be doing surround sound for this Patriots Raiders game tomorrow? Are you watching the game with Millie? Well, what's going on for you?
Well, you got Jim Nance on, which is Millie's personal favorite.
Oh,
you
know, so okay. That
the sound will be up at a higher level because he's doing the game. I won't. I mean, this is a painful game for me. I would rather wake up and somebody tell me who won. I don't really want to watch it, but I will.
Hey, well, we got to do it. We will talk about the NFL on the other side here to wrap up hour number one. It's the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Timmy Abefefe on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Don't forget, on DraftKings Sportsbook this season, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the app and use the promo code VSiN when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out here on a Saturday morning, college football Saturday, October 14th. Now we're playing for keeps. Thank you to Stormy Bonantoni, who joined us in the last segment. Check her out on the Florida Atlantic South Florida broadcast, ESPN2, 3:30 Eastern, 12:30 Pacific. Also, thank you to our buddy Tim Murray, who joined us a couple segments ago, VSiN College Football Betting Podcast and VSiN Primetime. Michael, let's get to the NFL, though. We've talked a lot of college football, and we will get back to the college football with our buddy Matt Eumanns in hour number two. But let's talk a little NFL, and let's talk about Deshaun Watson and the Cleveland Browns, because yesterday afternoon, Mary Kay Cabot, who has covered the Browns for thecleveland.com for a while now, plugged in to what goes on out there in Cleveland, reported yesterday that Deshaun Watson could miss multiple more games with a strain-like deep contusion in his rotator cuff. And Watson appears that he will not play until he is normally, can throw normally and pain-free. This is a situation to where, like, we felt that, all right, you'd think he would come back off the bye, hasn't come back, and now we're talking about maybe a few more weeks. Do you see Watson maybe going on short-term IR here for the Cleveland Browns?
Well, the IR is four games. There's no short-term, there's no long-term, there's just IR four games. So if they make that move to put him on IR, then, you know, he's going to be out four games. They're good enough defensively to work around him, but now they're working around Nick Chubb, they're working around him. You know, that's a challenge. You lose two of your top players offensively, it becomes problematic, and your defense can only take you so far. I think the underlying issue for me in this situation is, if you remember, that Sunday when he didn't play against Baltimore, that line never moved during the week. Mm-hmm. It never moved during the week. There was no inclination that he wasn't going to play. In fact, when he got on the injury report on Friday, I think it was, everybody was somewhat surprised. But nobody, including all the insiders, whether it's Schefter, whether it's Rappaport, whether it's our man Jordan Schultz, nobody anticipated him not playing. And then we got the bomb dropped on us that he wasn't going to play. And so for me, I think that this, more to this than meets the eye. And I think she's nibbling around the edges, right? He's not going to play till he's pain-free. I don't know what NFL player is pain-free after week six of the season. When does that happen? Now, I get it's his throwing shoulder, and that's really important. It's really important to have velocity and control of your arm, and you do not want to jeopardize that. I completely get that. But being pain-free and re-injuring are two different things.
Yeah, that's a good point to make there, because everyone out there is playing with something, a nick or a bruise or whatever. And he is the $230 million man for the Cleveland Browns. So obviously he has a lot of say in what happens. I don't know if this is Deshaun saying, I don't want to come back till I'm pain free, or the Browns maybe being cautious. Like, when you read through this story and you said that there's more than meets the eye, like where is this coming from? Do you think this is coming from Deshaun's camp, or is this coming from Cleveland saying, we're not going to go out there and risk our investment further injuring his right shoulder?
Well, I mean, that's the spin you're going to hear, that we don't want to risk our future investment. Get that. Understand that. And they're right. You don't want to cause any long-term damage. We've seen this happen to guys' shoulders before, and they can't come back from it. Look, the throwing shoulder, like, it's the same thing for baseball. You can't risk it. That being said, I think you've got to be a little smart here and understand the season could be slipping away from you. I mean, this Browns defense is elite. It's elite. Their corners are good. Their front seven's good. This would have been a really fun game to watch against two teams. It's got all the trademarks of a letdown from the 49ers, plus you factor in weather, right? Mm-hmm. But how do you really play it really with Cleveland? I mean, if you're taking the 10, you're taking the number. You're saying, and there's good reason to say this, right? In his career, Jim Schwartz is 9-1 against Kyle Shanahan and has only allowed over 20 points once in his career. Now, Shanahan's either as a coordinator or as a head coach. Schwartz is a head coach and a coordinator. So he plays the scheme well. So you feel like it was going to be a close game when it opened up plus Cleveland plus three. You kind of felt like, okay, I'll take the home dog here. But now, you know, the Niners can score with their defense against this Browns offense. We've seen P.J. Walker play. Now, remember, last year he beat Tom Brady at home in Carroll against the Bucs. Remember that game?
Mm-hmm.
Threw a great seven cut to Trimble, made some plays in the game. Can he do it again today in the wind and the rain and the cold? I don't know. I'm worried.
Yeah, I'd be worried as well. I mean, I think P.J. Walker, to his credit, might have made the throw of the season last year, the touchdown pass to D.J. Moore when Moore ended up taking his helmet off and stuff like that. Like, that was like rolling to his left, just hit him right in stride. An absolute bomb of a throw there. But the conditions will be a little bit different than in Atlanta, where it's indoors. Now this will be rainy and windy at home against the best defense in the league, for my money at least. So Deshaun Watson, he is out. Daniel Jones also out, dealing with the neck injury. That line right now, the Bills favored by 15. There's even some 15 and a halves out there. Total 44 as Buffalo comes back to the States.
Well, here's my concern, right? I mean, Buffalo losing their two best players is concerning defensively. Daquan Jones and Matt Milano.
Yeah.
And Buffalo gives up over 5.3 yards per carry on the ground. But Buffalo's offense sets the table for everything that happens in the game. When they play from in front, their defense is built to play with the lead, and they rush the passer. They're going to miss Milano. There's no question about that. They're going to miss Daquan Jones. There's no question about that. Carolina letting him out of there last year has hurt their team. The issue is Tyrod Taylor. Like, Tyrod Taylor, can he stay healthy? Can he make it through the game? Like, I'm not sure of that. Like, I'm not sure of that. All it says, take the 15 and a half. But how are the Giants going to move the ball? I think we'll see Tommy DeVito in the third quarter. I don't think Tyrod can stay healthy. He's not the same guy that he once was. You can see he's declining in his play. And behind a bad, did I mention the word bad to you? Offensive line? Like, I don't know how he stays healthy in the game. Like, who's blocking Von Miller? Who's blocking Leonard Floyd? Who's going to block Ed Oliver? Like, they can't block at the Giants. You know, now maybe Daboll will make a deal with McDermott because they were former partners at Buffalo that the Bills will count the five Mississippi to help Tyrod Taylor throw the ball, but I doubt that'll happen. Like, how's he going to play?
Yeah.
This is a hard game. I don't want to take the Bills at 15 and a half, but there's no way you're getting me to take that. There's no way. I know sharps play numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Logically, I can't take the Giants. I don't care what number you give me.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, because there might not be a bottom in this game for the New York Giants. And that's not to say that there's not any ever going to be value on them. I'm just saying, in this particular spot, with what's going on with Tyrod Taylor and how, like, it looks like he can't really protect himself that much at this stage in his career, who knows what you see from the New York Giants. Maybe Saquon Barkley coming back, maybe he provides a spark, but there's no offensive line. So good luck, Saquon, as well, if you're going to go out there. I know he's questionable to play practice throughout the week. We'll see if he ends up going ahead and being active in the game tomorrow night, Sunday night football, Giants and the Bills. We do have a few minutes left here, and I do want to ask you about the MVP favorite right now, who is Patrick Mahomes, the reigning MVP, two-time MVP. Last couple of nights ago, they went ahead and beat Denver 19-8 in a game that was pretty forgettable. But based on what you've seen through 6 weeks with this Chiefs offense, like, do you think Mahomes is a justified favorite at MVP? Because it feels like it's not the same explosive offense that we've seen in his MVP seasons of the past.
No, it's not. The MVP of their team is the defense. I mean, let's put things in perspective. I think Mahomes is great. I'm not knocking him. Yeah. I ranked him as my first-rated quarterback, and I wrote in there, you know, he's down from 8.1 yards per attempt last year down to 7.1. They have no explosiveness. I also wrote that I truly believe they should go after Mekhi Hardman if they can afford him on their cap. They need a receiver. Rice may be the guy down the road, but right now they don't have any explosiveness. You know, and Kelce is a receiver, but he's the only one that really, and this offensive line is the underlying story. Like, Denver got pressure on Mahomes. He had to move around and make plays. He was making second plays in the offense. So, yeah, I don't see it. This is just a popularity contest. I mean, Brock Purdy should be the favorite. Josh Allen should be the favorite. You know, Tyreek Hill should be on the board. He's not even on the board. I mean, Jared Goff should be higher than he is at 30-1. I mean, Jared Goff's playing as well as anybody.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, look, two of the last 2 weeks, they've lost one. He hasn't played anywhere near an MVP level. Nowhere near it. I mean, he's throwing bubbles to receivers and they're taking it to the house. I mean, come on. But yeah, this is a popularity contest. And when you're betting into a popularity contest, then logic gets thrown out the window and evaluations get thrown out the window.
Yeah. And I think also, especially with awards markets and futures markets, liability gets taken into it. So I'm sure there's a lot of liability for Patrick Mahomes because he's the best player in the league and all that. But just based on what we've seen through 6 weeks, like, I don't think you could justify him being the MVP favorite. Like you mentioned, Brock Purdy, his efficiency numbers, he's lapping the field. He's lapping the field in efficiency. Like, but because his name is Brock Purdy, he's 6-1 and he's not the favorite. Yeah.
Nobody's willing to say it. We got idiots on TV saying that, you know, other players, who's better than him? Like, seriously, watch the games. Watch them. I keep saying, like, what is the difference between Purdy and Tua? Nobody gives me an answer.
your guy said that if Mac was there, he'd be playing just as good as Purdy.
My guy, your guy. You two are on the same boat on that one. Don't put him on me now.
He's the gift that keeps on giving.
He's the Sean Salisbury of this generation.
We'll get to the Lombardi look ahead to start hour number two. Also, what's next for the Denver Broncos and Russell Wilson? We'll answer that question here on the DraftKings Network.